Okay, everybody, welcome back to the Coogan Chronicles podcast, a podcast where, what happens here, AJ?
Two former child actors.
Do what? Do what? What do we do?
Duh. Talk to other child actors.
Is that, that's what we do. We talk to other former kid actors, not child actors, former kid actors.
Yeah. That's right. Former kid actors about what it was like growing up in the biz.
That's the whole deal and what their life's like now. My name is Chris Marquette. What's your dude? What's your name, dude?
I'm AJ Trouth.
You're AJ Trouth. What's your dude? What's your dude? Are you a dude? What's your dude? You're AJ Trouth. I'm Chris Marquette. Yeah, hi, guys. Welcome back. Anybody who's returning from listening, welcome anybody who's new. We appreciate you guys sticking with us on the sporadic. Sometimes we release on a Friday. Sometimes we're every couple weeks. Sometimes we're every week. We're just
sometimes we go to Bali for a month with our sometimes other that's friends. It.
And exactly.
We don't care. It doesn't. We don't care. We just live our lives.
Yeah, we're just living our lives. You know. Yeah. What are we supposed to do? We're beholden to you people. Is that what you think?
If somebody had to guess which one of the two of us went to Bali, they would probably get it wrong based on our appearance
today. Yes, I was about to say, if you're watching on YouTube, 100% you're like, that guy, not only did he go to Bali, he lives in Bali.
He's
now Balinese. Yeah, he's a Balinese man, that guy right there. Look at you.
You'd be wrong. But I'm the one that went to Bali.
Exactly. No, I'm the one that went to Bali. Yeah, you'd be wrong. AJ's not. No, AJ didn't go to Bali. I did. Okay. So AJ, Bali was awesome. By the way, it was good. I'm glad to be back in America, in Merca. It is nice to have sidewalks, paved sidewalks, where you're not walking essentially on the road. That's cool. That's really nice. But Bali was beautiful. It was really wonderful. Got to do a Hindu temple. I got to do a water ceremony. Got cleansed. That was cool. It felt very touristy, like a little like Disneyland. For like some spirituality, but in my heart, it felt good. It felt real nice. So that's cool. But anyway, let's talk child actor stuff. I got this thing. AJ has no idea what I'm about to say, which is cool. Usually we talk a little bit about what we're going to start talking about and then just jump in. No idea. So here's the deal, AJ. We can talk about it now because it just, there's a story that I've been reading about slowly for like a year that's been in the news, that's been on major headlines, and it finally sort of finished, or at least the story's done now, it seems. And this story is Tiffany Haddish.
Here we go.
Yeah, but it's done now. So now it feels like, okay, there's not as many question marks. It might be a little easier to give an opinion on. Tiffany Haddish and another comedian, I'm forgetting his name at the moment. Anyway, they got sued by two former kid actors who claimed sexual harassment, and actually not just sexual harassment, I think it was child molestation or child sexual harassment.
We should probably have the details correct if we want to talk about this, but
yeah, but the thing is, I don't want to talk about it specifically. It brings up a good general topic, because here's what I read a lot about it, I obviously read a lot about it, so much so
obviously
I can't
not
remember
that
what the charges were.
We don't know
exactly.
The second guy. We don't know the second guy's name. We don't know the charges.
This is former kid actor. This is former kid actor homeschool brain. That's what this is, guys. I can memorize lines, but I can't memorize an actual news article. So they were suing Tiffany Haddish and another comedian for a skit that they had performed in. That apparently was a joke about like pedophilia or something, like a pedophile. And what they said is that they were asked to do these sexually inappropriate.
Don't take any of this.
Go read about it.
Because
we're
definitely flying fast and loose with all of this.
We are. But anyway, fast and loose. Here we go. So, but anyway, she got sued for this. And it's been in the court system for like a year. The Jane Doe that filed the suit along with her sibling, I believe, I think she's now of age. She's over 18. She hasn't released her name or anything, but she dropped the case. The whole thing's dismissed. She dismissed it with prejudice. She came out and said, you know what? Actually, through this whole thing, I realized Tiffany Haddish did not try to harm me, would not try to harm me. This is a mistake. I'm dismissing with prejudice, which means she can never come back and redo this again. It's over. It's done. You know. So that's that story. But reading this story was so interesting to me, because all of a sudden I thought, man, that's really fascinating that you could, that maybe in this day and age, you do something, even if it's a comedy sketch, that later in retrospect makes you feel very uncomfortable with what you had done, that you might have grounds for a lawsuit with something, because I'm suddenly thinking about all the things I know I had done and all the things that I knew lots of other former kid actors had done that I'm sure, I mean, we've talked to enough of them that they look back on and feel sometimes very uncomfortable with what they were asked to do or what they did do, you know? And I'm just thinking, I was like, man, this is just, I don't know, to me, it opened up this box of, this Pandora's box of like, what, you know, where does this go? And where does this, you know, under that microscope, you know, like, how do we look at things? Because there's, you know, kid actors are asked to do a lot of adult things. In this vein, it was comedy, a comedy sketch, but obviously, and who knows what the specifics are, this sketch was never released. You know, Tiffany Haddish went on record saying, I shouldn't have done this sketch. It wasn't funny. Big mistake. My apologies. Past that, no comment. It was all because it was all in the courts. So we don't know exactly what it is. But all I know is like, you know, I'd love your thoughts on, I mean, the interesting part of that, which is for someone to say yes in the moment and be like, yeah, okay, all right, yeah, we'll film this. And then later go, actually, that's not cool. I know, you know what, not only is that not cool, this might have be grounds for something like a serious crime and something worth suing someone over, or at least putting some big accusations onto somebody. And it's just, it was fascinating. I was reading this. I was like, man, that's, I wonder how many former kid actors could possibly feel like this or wonder to themselves, like, was that grounds for something? What do you think? I keep rambling here. Give me something.
So if your question is, do you have grounds to go back after the fact, even though you said yes in the moment, to say, actually, I don't think that was okay. I think part of the answer to that for me would be, who is saying yes in the moment? Is it the parent saying yes to the material? Because I don't think you can be, as a child, be expected to have, depending on the age, of course, be expected to have the wherewithal to know what you're actually saying yes to. And so, of course, you would reserve the right to be able to go back after the fact and have an opinion. But who would you be going back to? Would you be going back to the writer or the director or the producers of the project? Or would you be going back to your parents to say, why was I allowed to be in this thing? And maybe there's an overarching question of around, what is it appropriate for a child to do, even in the name of art and entertainment, versus not? And maybe there's some governing body that could be associated with that. It's probably a can of worms to open that up, because things like curse words or there's a whole myriad of things that could be problematic for a child to do or not to do. Like, if a child audience member, based on the rating system, would not be able to see that movie, would it still be appropriate for a child to perform that? Thinking of horror films and a lot of violence and things like that associated, like, would that be appropriate? Now, I think the rating system, I'm fairly certain that so long as an adult says you, it will accompany you or gives you permission to go to the movie, you can still see it. So in this instance, perhaps because an adult is chiming in and giving permission for the child to do the performance. It's a tricky question, but I don't know that the onus is on the, I don't think the onus is on the child. It's on the individual saying yes, which in all of these instances, it's the guardian signing off.
So then you wonder, right? Does that immediately then, like, sort of, at least the way things are set up now, if essentially, because my guess is essentially it's on the parent, right? Because like the producers and they can ask, and ultimately if the kid, but they're not the legal guardian. They're not the ones that are legally in charge of making decisions for that child. They're hiring them. But so really it's the legal guardian. So then the lawsuit really should be geared towards the legal guardian for allowing them to do that than the person saying they should do, or asking them, would you do this? You know, on
well,
camera,
I don't know the details.
The scene. Yeah, we don't know the details, but I'm talking a little hypothetical, right?
Yeah, that's fine. So we can talk generally, and if it's about I should not have been allowed to dramatize the thing I was asked to dramatize, that's clearly defined at the outset. You know what the script is. You know what the expectations are as you're on set, and the director's giving you instruction. Ostensibly, the parents would be present for that, and then the only thing somebody on set can do is ask, and I don't know, are the parents in a position where they're continually granting permission all along the way in production? I don't know, but
It's
how
hard,
much
right?
onus is put on the script?
It's hard because right now the rules, at least the ones we grew up with, I don't know if things have evolved in the last little bit, but and we should look at we'll look into it. But the rules are, you know, the parents are they're encouraged and I think suggested to be there as often as they would like, but there's no requirement for it. You know, in fact, there's no requirement that anyone is there while you're actually filming, that there's any guardian there. You know, like, because I've been on, I told you I worked on the set last year.
Yeah, I
Sometimes the
think we're
tutor's
getting
there,
back.
sometimes the
Yeah,
mom's there, right? Yeah.
there's something you brought up in an earlier episode, which I was harping on last season too, which is this idea of a liaison or some type of
Yeah,
a
like the same way they
professional
have,
that is specifically tasked with that.
exactly. Because now they have intimacy
Yeah,
coordinators, you
intimacy
know, for
coordinators.
people who have
Yes.
to do, yeah, a scene where, you know, there's like any sort of sexually explicit material or, you know, even kissing or holding hands. I think that it depends on the project. And I think the rating probably, I don't know what all the rules are, but yeah, you know, it sounds like they could use a liaison in this regard, probably for these exact reasons. And I wonder if they're figuring that stuff out, but it's fascinating because it made me
Yeah.
think I wasn't sure what was in my brain as I was reading in these things, but just in us talking now, I suddenly remembered this. I did a show and I was like a teenager and I was a series regular on the show. So when I got the pilot, I was just, you know, I was playing this character, there was nothing. I knew what I was getting into. But then 10 episodes down the line, I had to do an episode which was all about masturbation. And it was just me being like humiliated with masturbation. It's an adult show, it's on network TV. And I remember we did this and it was really uncomfortable for me. It was like the most uncomfortable thing I'd ever done. Like I hadn't talked to my
Yeah.
parents about anything like that. It was a weird, and there's adults being like, hey man, can you be like way more angsty and shameful about this. And I was like feeling 10 times the amount of shame that I just even having to talk
Yeah.
about this with an adult, you know, and I just realized like, oh yeah, like how do you deal with that these days and in this climate?
Yeah.
And how can that evolve to make sure somebody's comfortable and that somebody doesn't suddenly go, because I was 16 at the time, I'm not 18 years old, and suddenly really get wounded by that or you know, or take major issue with it. It's tricky. It's crazy. I don't know
Yeah,
how you
maybe it's
draw
a
that line.
larger. I mean, some of this is exclusive to kids, but some of it is not. Like it could, because there's things that
Every
EPS
actor,
do that would
yeah.
be triggering to an in to triggering to an individual that you don't know, that you can we can't generalize, you know, segments of the population and expect that they would all react the same way to things, whether that's based on age or gender or other things. So maybe it's about like a sensitivity coordinator across the set, and perhaps there's special emphasis for younger performers, but there's all kinds of triggering things that actors are asked to do
Yeah.
on a
I mean,
set.
it's why you figure it, there's why there's HR departments in every single job. There's why there's a giant, amazing legal system that we have with incredibly brilliant people for God knows how long now who have slowly, you know, or, you know, worked on rules and thought about things like this in order to create rules and put things in place that protect people or allow people to have a better work environment and life and, you know, less problems and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, you know, like, because when I hear that, like a triggering event, you know, there's lots of things you read about with people that, you know, they experience something and then later on down the line, they realize that that thing was actually deeply wounding. And now they get to go back in a legal sense or go back in a civil lawsuit or go back, at least publicly. You know, like there's a thousand instances where people can kind of take issue later with something they experienced that they didn't in the moment and that are totally justified in doing it. So, and there's a lot in place to deal with that, you know. There's a lot in place that I don't think usually online in like the in social media there isn't a lot of structure in place to deal with it. It's just sort of like big voice. If you can come out and say something, then you
No,
know,
yeah, and I think maybe we're getting
you know,
off base here a little bit
yeah,
or off
maybe we're yeah,
the
maybe I'm
original subject,
meandering a
but
little. Yeah.
yeah, but suffice to say, we're always erring on the side of protecting the young performer and acknowledging that there are times where they're asked to do things that people aren't perhaps aware just what that means to a kid. They, you know, these are still kids. Just because they're acting or working in a professional
But
sense and getting paid money,
totally.
they're still kids.
But think about it, right? It's a Tiffany Haddish comedy sketch. She's at the top of the charts. She's like a well-respected movie star comedian. Everyone seems to like her personality. She's making this funny sketch. You audition for it. You got hired. You're on the set. You're filming. You're making jokes. It's this thing. And in
Yeah.
that moment, they say, "Can
Well,
we try this?" Or it's written in, and you're suddenly doing something that you didn't even do in the audition. And you say you got to really do it, and you're like doing it and you feel strange and it's like really poking, you know, yeah, it's really, yeah, you're reaching into some risque comedy territory with some pedophile jokes, you know, and
it's all a fair point. I think it's important that we stop talking about that case because we don't know the specifics. If anything, it was a springboard to have this conversation, but most importantly, who does the buck stop with? Is that the parent of the child performer? Is that some other person on set, like a sensitivity coordinator or similar? But nonetheless, the child should not be in a position to say, hey, are you comfortable doing this or not doing this?
Yeah.
Well, they don't know how to say.
It goes back to that point for our season two opener that we talked about, right? Which is like, for a while, I was just like, just the parent. And then it started to make more and more sense. Like, actually, there should probably be someone that even protects the kid from the parent. Not that they're doing anything particularly or on purposefully harmful, but just through some negligence or some naivete, or because they're a human being. They're like, you get swept up in a moment and you could make a decision on a big set and everybody's looking at you and be like, can we try this? And you're like, sure. You know,
also to protect the parent, because these are not in many cases, not tenured or entertainment professionals. They're jumping into this after being brand new to the whole scene too, and wanting to please and make people happy, and what the expectations are. Is this normal? Yeah, they don't know.
I brought my uncle to the set of House years ago, and he's like, you know, from Florida and like works in the sheriff's department and like is no part of the entertainment industry outside of being related to me. Has a nephew who's an actor. He loved House. That's his favorite show. I go, hey, I got a part on House. He's like, I'm flying to LA. And he comes out to LA and I bring him there. I have never seen someone so nervous in my life on a set. He didn't want to breathe. He was like, is this air okay to breathe? Like, he didn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah, he's exactly.
Like, you know, his body's convulsing. He was like, oh my, I was like, dude, just walk. We can walk around the set. I'll introduce people. Yeah. No. Yeah. He didn't even want to come on the set. He was like, I'll just stay in the trailer. I was like, what is wrong? You came all the way from. Yeah. And so like, that, you know,
that's
there's
a great
someone
example.
Who was. Exactly. Just having no idea.
It would not be strange that your parents would be like, oh my God, we're so busy with work. Hey, Bill, can you please be Chris's chaperone for the next week and a half on House when he does that? And he'd be like, yeah, sure, I could do that. And he'd show it. And if you were asked to do something compromising, Bill wouldn't know.
He wouldn't know. Yeah, yeah. If they were like, yo, can we get your kid naked and rub him down with some he'd be like,
certain lines that
he'd be like, that sounds like an episode of House. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly.
I'm sorry that I'm even laughing at that, because there's people that have been through that real life experience. Knowing Bill,
we're not talking about Bill.
I'm laughing at Bill, knowing Bill, but
everybody calm down, AJ, calm down.
Yeah.
I know. We're always talking. I know. But you know, we're trying to be a little entertaining. That's the other deal too. In a sensitive, thoughtful way. All right, whatever. I'm sorry I made the joke. We're running. We got like a 20 minute opening right now is what we're doing. Let's get to our actual episode. Perhaps why you even clicked on this. Our guest today is Rivka Reyes, I believe. If I'm mispronouncing her last name, my apologies. You may have seen her in School of Rock. I believe she was the bassist, the young, cool, hip bassist. She's incredibly charming. She reached out to us because she hosts a podcast where she also interviews former kid actors as she has one herself. So very similar idea, exact same idea. It's called Where Are We Now? You can find it same place you find ours. Check it out. It's awesome. She's really great. We got to like wax on, you know, like what we've all learned from talking to so many former kid actors, opening up this conversation so much. We got to learn a lot about her and it was awesome that she came out really vulnerably and open with us and got to share a lot of herself and her story. So without further ado, our talk with Rivka. Well, thanks for jumping in. We were talking tattoos a second ago. You got one last night. And it's awesome. Thank you for showing us. But you immediately, your thought went to, oh man, you know, when I was young getting tattoos, you were warned not to get them, like it could prevent you from getting a job. I remember that so distinctly.
Yeah, like when I was in theater school, like all the teachers were like, I don't know, like if you want to book any work where you like are in a period piece or something, like good luck with that, with all the tattoos. Because I had, by the time I finished college, I had like four. you know, small ones too on my arms, but I have pretty fair skin and the ink is black. So, you know, it's, but I was just like, okay. But also tattoos make me feel more confident, and having confidence in the audition room is a good thing. And like,
maybe that was my mistake. I needed tattoos. Yeah. I needed to get, and I would have,
that's what you needed. Confidence,
it would have come together.
Yeah.
You just got a big fat neck tattoo. You would have, that's it. You would have booked.
Well, I always say like, but now it's like, you see like Dominic Fike on Euphoria has little face tats, and it's like, you know, a bunch of tatted people are working. So it's really like,
and there's so many incredibly famous actors that are like full pirates. They're just tatted up neck to toe.
Yeah. Like Chris Evans has like full tattoos.
All of them. I mean, you guys, Ben Affleck is the famous tattooer. His whole back is tattooed in the most awful way possible. It's as if, but like, you'd never guess that, right? You never guess Ben Affleck got a full back tattoo. You know, there's a thousand actors that are like that. It's weird. I wonder if that's still the case. I bet it is. I bet there's, mainly because I imagine a majority of the work for young performers doesn't require, like the characters don't say they have tattoos, the character. Right. And I feel like that's what they're immediately guiding young performers towards, is like, look, go play into where there's going to be work. Don't get tattoos. I mean, AJ and I have a close friend of ours who's going to be on the show soon named John. And John, yeah, was also, by the time he was 17, he had like 5 or 6 tattoos already. And by the time he was 20, he was getting covered like real fast. And I remember all of his tattoos were designed so that if he was wearing a t-shirt, he looked like he had not a single one. You'd never guess it. And then he took his shirt or wore shorts, and you were like, "Oh my God, he looked like what you imagine a Harley Davidson motorcycle driver would be."
But he did that. Dad, literally my dad.
Was that your dad? Yeah.
Yeah, my dad. So he has a lot of tattoos as well. And his little joke that he would always say, he's like, "Don't get fucking tattoos. Like, you know, I have enough for all of you. Like, you guys don't need any." But now, like, me and my sisters all have a couple, and I mean, my one of my sisters has more than I do, and hers are big, but she's not in the industry. She's a chef. So like, you know, but
so you got to have them.
Yeah. It's kind of like a rite of passage.
Has it ever played a part in your career as an actor at all? Like, has there ever been a point where it worked or didn't, or you even felt some sort of like, it play in someone's mind?
Like, not really. I think it's so funny. I just wrapped a feature in which my character has a tattoo. And in the script, it was like, you know, Jane looks over and notices a rose tattoo on Sue's back. And I'm Sue. And it's so funny. I'm like, the one thing I don't have a tattoo of is a rose. So they had to like put a fake tattoo on me. But I was just like, is it like cool that all my other ones are showing? And she says, "I like your tattoo." Like, and they just changed the line to make it, "I like your rose tattoo." Just to have that specificity. It's like, which one?
What about my other tattoos?
Right. Yeah. But
have you ever had to hide them? Was there ever like,
I do. Yeah. I have done a few commercials where, like, I did a McDonald's commercial where they had to airbrush my arms like completely. So I was wearing a short sleeve shirt. And then I just did one where I was supposed to be like a high school student. So they had me in a jacket. So they just basically covered like the big one that I have on my wrist and this other one that I have on my other wrist. And, you know, for the most part, it was covered. But most of my stuff is similarly, you know, if I'm wearing sleeves or pants, like, I'm good. But
you
then
can't tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Tank shorts.
How was that? I have no idea how old you are. And it's always considered a rude question, but you played a high school kid in high school. Was that one, how old are you? And two, does that happen often? So, I mean, you have a very youthful face.
Thank you. I blame being Filipino and having just really good skincare habits.
Yeah,
and being sober too has definitely aged me down like a lot.
That helps.
But yeah.
Not a lot of toxins in there. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But I am not in high school. I am, holding for silence. Sorry. It looks very close to Sunset. Sunset Boulevard is like right down the street. So, but I'm not in high school. I am going to be 30 this year. So, thank you. I can't wait.
Nice.
30 and flirty and thriving. I get called in for anything from like, late high school, like senior high school or college aged to like, now I've been getting called in for moms, like, you know, 30, you know, mid 30s and stuff. So it's like really, it's really interesting to me. And my manager's always just like, you know, just submit for it. Like, even if you, you don't feel like 35 is like something you can play, like they'll, you know, if they like you enough, they'll like age the character down. And I'm like, yeah, okay. That's never happened. Yeah. But,
you know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They say that to every actor though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you got to throw your hat in the ring being an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. At least show them my,
it sounds like you've been working a ton.
I have an amazing team. I mean, I have a great manager who I started working with, I mean, just a few months ago in November, and I've had the same agent for roughly like, yeah, ever since I got out of college. So coming up on, you know, coming up on nine, yeah, almost a decade. Yeah. And she, you know, before she was my agent, she was a casting director that would, you know, hire me often in like theater in Chicago. And she like opened her own agency a couple years ago, and I'm like represented in Chicago by her and then like by the LA branch of that agency here. And they submit me like for everything. And I go in for stuff like, you know, big stuff, like a couple times a week.
That's cool.
And like, I just did two Christmas movies in a row. So fun, but like I'm kind of like over Christmas. Like I
would like get me to Halloween, guys. No, get me to Halloween.
It's so funny because I'm about to go shoot a horror movie in a couple of weeks. So
well, there we you go. Know, there you got you go. Your wish.
Yeah.
How, but do you mind me asking how does it feel when you're at 30? Because you've been playing since you were in high school. All right, wait, give us context of your career. We know you did School of Rock at 13.
10.
Did you continue at 10? Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So at 10 years old, and then you continued to be a professional actor for the rest of your adolescence into your adulthood, and you've never stopped. You've just continued doing it.
Yeah.
So I got to imagine now it's going on like at least 15 years.
Yeah.
Auditioning for characters in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so funny because when I was actually in high school, I was like, quote unquote, too tall to be on a Disney show because all of the Disney kids, like I was screen tested for Hannah Montana and like I was too tall because Miley's like, she was like a shorty. Like, I mean, she was like maybe like 4'11 when she got cast.
Are you super tall?
I was, yeah. I mean, I've been like I was 5'7 when I was 10, you know, like in School of Rock, I was the second tallest girl, like, and you know, I was very insecure about all that too, of course, which is like, you can kind of see me like slouching, like when I was, and I was also just deeply unconfident when I was a kid. But when I was in high school, I wasn't like, you know, castable as a high school kid, but my face was so young that I couldn't play older. So they didn't really know what to do with me. So I didn't work a lot. Excuse me. Whoa. Oh my God.
It's all good. Wait, do you mind me asking, like, so when you go through, when you audition for Hannah Montana and then they say you didn't get it, is it strictly, that's the reason you get, is they're like, you're just too tall.
No.
Like,
I think it was a combination of things. I think that was one of them. Of course, all of the information that I got was channeled through my mother. You know, and she had her own like points of view that she would kind of, to put it nicely, a lot of it was just like, you know, with Hannah Montana specifically, she was like, it's just because of her dad, like being famous. It's all nepotism. Like you know, if only I had been like, you know, the famous singer I wanted to be, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. I think it was a combination of things. Like, you know, it was down to chemistry, like, right. Like, chemistry and, or lack thereof, and, you know, experience, because who ended up getting that role was Emily Osment. She'd been, you know, working a lot longer and a lot more than I had, and was already, you know, and also had the nepotism edge too, like, but I don't really like to think about why I didn't get a part, like, you know, 15 years
ago. I'm just curious. I was just curious if it's like, because to be honest, I heard that, like, I was really short, and so I heard quite often, sometimes it worked to my advantage, like, it's great, we love that he's like 4'6", you know, but other times, you know, legit, especially as I started to get towards like a high school age, I was tiny. I was like bare bones, like 90 pounds, 4'11". And they were just like, we just don't buy him as like a 15-year-old. Like, he's almost 17. You know, it's like, I heard that stuff, and it was demoralizing at that age. It was really not.
Yeah. Anything tied to like physical appearance. Go ahead.
Sorry, guys. I got a I must have a delay. So as you guys are talking, I'm going to say something, but it's throwing the two of you off. So go for it, Rivka.
I was going to say, like, anything, like, regarding, like, physical appearance or, like, height, something I really don't have much control over is, like, how tall I am. And or if it's, like, a, you know, how light-skinned I am, how, you know, dark-featured I am or whatever. Like, anything it's like that, I'm, like, I used to really spiral about it and be like, you know, I wish I was born blonde or I wish I was shorter or, like, whatever, when I was a kid, for sure. But now it's just like, okay, well, like, here are the facts. I'm tall. I'm Filipino. I'm covered in tattoos. And I'm not, like, a size zero. And that's, like, you know, take me as I am or get the fuck out. You know?
Was your mom an actor?
Mm-mm. No. No experience whatsoever in the film industry. But, you know, for most of my time working as a child, she was, like, my manager. Famous momager trope, very much fell into that trope, and it was so funny because, like, she had no understanding of it whatsoever except for what she learned from other moms on set, like, especially at School of Rock, all of those moms, with the exception of a handful, like, were stage moms. Like, their kids had been doing commercials since they were two, you know. And my mom would just, like, listen to them and take whatever advice they had and stuff, rather than, like, hiring a professional, you know, or a coach or anything. She was my coach for all my auditions, and that wasn't great because, you know, she wasn't an actor or an acting coach. And ultimately, I would, like, walk into the room, like, with her voice in the back of my head, knowing intuitively that my choices were stronger than hers, but I would still do her choices just because I was kind of a people pleaser by nature. I think when we're kids, we all kind of are, you know, because we think that our parents, or I'll speak from the eye, like, I thought that my parents were the smartest people on the face of the planet. They had all the right answers, and that I kind of had to do what they said. And if I didn't, you know, we can get into religious trauma and all that, but it was just like this, you know, environment of, like, if you do what we say, you go to heaven. And if you are disobedient, you go to hell. Like, that is the you know, foundation of the religion that I was, you know, kind of raised in. But
those are some stakes to add to acting too.
Yeah.
Somehow we're there.
Is that,
did you go ahead?
Wait, can we unpack just a little bit? Cause you're given a lot of really interesting information about you, and some that I very much relate to, but you know, if you don't mind me sort of, like, psychoanalyze just a little bit, yeah. You know, when you sort of threw out your mom there at first, you know, and her sort of reaction to, if you didn't get a job, it sounded like there was a little bit of her own sort of her perspective in life, and the eye rolling a little bit that I see too, sort of gives me the sense that, like, you know, there's it wasn't hugely beneficial to you or didn't necessarily affect you.
It did not, that it positively. Did not serve me. No. And ultimately, like, you know, that whole thing of, like, hey, like, if you do good at this audition, like, you get to buy us a house, or, like, you get to buy us another car, or, you know, that was always kind of the vibe. And anytime I would be like, ugh, I don't want to go in for this. Like, I was called in for the last, that like Mary, nativity movie that came out in, like, 2004, I think, like, it was like the Jesus movie. I was called in for the role of the Virgin Mary. And my mom was like, oh my God, like, this would be perfect for you, of course. And I'm just like, I don't know about this. Like, and I was just like, I really.
You'll play the Virgin Mary and you'll buy us a Beamer. Right. This is going to be amazing. That's really funny. Can you give me context? Would you mind, you know, giving us context about, like, what was your relationship with your mom like outside of these little things? And what's it like now?
If
she was your.
She was my friend. She was never my mom. Like, you know, she was, but she was always, you know, ever since I was like four, I started playing guitar when I was 4 years old. And, you know, while I loved it, it was, you know, everything to me. That's how I got School of Rock. Like, I was a real musician, and they were specifically looking for kids who could shred. And I was really into it. I practiced every day. I was, you know, that was my religion, was like waking up and picking up my guitar before school, practicing, finishing my homework as soon as I could to pick up my guitar, and get really good at it and all that. But I my mom was constantly taking me to and from, you know, lessons, school, other extracurriculars. And unfortunately, like I have three younger siblings, but one of them is much younger than me. But the two that were, you know, closer to me in age, like their life was like waiting in the car for me at, you know, guitar lessons or at an audition or whatever. Like that was their childhood was, you know.
Why didn't they, were they just not playing instruments?
I mean, they were too young. They were literally babies. They were babies. Yeah. And then my one of my sisters now, JoJo, she started acting lessons when she, you know, she would take little theater classes when she was like starting around four as well. And she's now, you know, she's on a big TV show right now. She's on Single Drunk Female. She's like, this, you know, she's not the lead character, but everyone's favorite character. Like she's the star. Cool. Yeah, it's so cool. But then there's that thing too of like, then with all that, like with both of us being actors, like my mom kind of tries to Cain and Abel, you know, for going with the Bible reference, like pit us against each other almost. She and I don't have that relationship at all. Like there would be times where she would be like, oh, you know, Rivka, my little musician, and JoJo, my little actor. And it would be like in a passive aggressive way where it's like, yes, I am a musician. And that is the first thing I started with. But acting is my passion. And like telling, you know, film is in general, like I love, you know, any part of film that I could be a part of. Like I worked in locations and like I've PA'd before and you know, I'm a writer too. And been on the production side of things quite a bit. And like for her to kind of like throw that out there, it kind of hits me in the gut in like a not great way. Go ahead.
Are you guys close now? Did you go as you became an adult?
No. At the beginning of the pandemic, I wrote a piece, like an essay about growing up in the industry, and being kind of this like obsolete child actor. Those were my words, like, you know, not the words of the publication that it was for. But like, I definitely talked in not too much detail about the dynamic between my mom and I, and she saw it and was really hurt by it. And you know, it was, I said nothing but the truth. And she was just like, well, you made me look like a bad mom, blah, blah, blah. I was like, well, I'm sorry that the truth makes you feel like you look like a bad mom. And she really didn't like that, you know, and it became this whole thing of like, after everything I've done for you, blah, 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 paying for all those guitar lessons, taking all those auditions. Like, that's the whole point. It's like, you know, I have this career that I have now and this beautiful life that I have now, despite you, like not to spite you, but despite you, like despite all that you did for me, you know, like, I am grateful for her taking me to all of those lessons and auditions and all that, but like, none of that is her. Like she just drove the car, right? Like,
you know, there is something interesting. You know, my mom in particular is a very, very, selfish person. I'm estranged from her. I haven't talked to her in a very long time. And as I got older, I didn't realize how much of her, as I got older, I started to realize how much of her identity and how much of her self-worth came from my acting career.
Yeah,
and, you know, it, as I've gotten even older than that, you know, from that period, what I've also realized too, is that, I'm a parent now, my daughter just turned two. And what I've realized too, is that, you know, your identity as a parent, I don't know if you'll ever not, how do I say this part? I realized with my mom all of a sudden that it wasn't as wrong as I thought it was for her to, I don't know, attach her identity to that and her worth to it, because suddenly I realized that that was her strange contribution.
Yeah, you know, in life. Totally.
Now my mom's an unhealthy person, and she can be she could be vicious in the past. So the ways that it, you know, sometimes she would sort of throw things at me regarding that was, you know, meant to be hurtful. But it's a complicated thing, I think, with child performers and that parent that is as invested in it as they would need to be for their kid to work and be successful and find an actual career in it. And it's really complicated as time goes by and you're an adult. And there's a, I got to imagine, it sounds like that, you know, if you, I got to imagine that, like, I mean, AJ and I have talked a lot about, like, our honest take of our parents and who they were during our time would probably be hurtful, even if it's not meant to be, mm-hmm. even if we're not, you know, holding some sort of, I don't know, some sort of harsh feelings about it or anything. Only because I think there's a weird, it's a weird life to choose. Like, as an adult, I always think that I'm like, it's a weird thing to go.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to fully do this. And because you're supporting your kid and that's absolutely amazing, but you are, that has to be your life too.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a whole lot of gray area.
And I have a lot of, you know, empathy for my mom and stuff. Like she, you know, she has stuff of her own that she hasn't looked at, like her, you know, her childhood stuff that she hasn't looked at. And she, you know, and that's where we're different. Like where I have made my entire life's purpose, like looking at my stuff, working through it, and then helping others who have the same issues. You know, that's like what sobriety for me is all about. And that's what all like mental health awareness and recovery is all about and trauma recovery and all that. But like, you know, I can't help but feel like, yeah, like you said, like to some extent, like I don't have children, but, you know, we see our children or, you know, our parents see us as extensions of them when we're really not. Like, you know, once we're born, like, you know, we're autonomous, even though, yeah, there are rules and stuff, but especially like once I'm, you know, at a level where I can have my own thoughts and ideas about things, like I'm autonomous and I'm not an extension of my parents anymore. Yeah, sure. I have their blood and their DNA in me. And then there's that like ancestral trauma stuff that gets passed down. But ultimately, like, I think the level of codependency that, you know, was displayed when I wrote that piece and she got so upset over it. You know, we've had, you know, discussions, very brief discussions about it since then. And it's been, you know, a little over coming up on 2 years since I wrote that piece. We did have like 9 months of no contact whatsoever. After I wrote it, I told her, I was like, I think, you know, this would be a good time for us to have some distance. Like, you know, I love you. And this boundary is because I want you to be in my life down the line. I just need some space. And then, you know, after that 9 month period, I like wrote her a letter, you know, saying like, I'm ready to, you know, recalibrate and talk about our relationship and moving forward and stuff. And she was like open to that. So, you know, we see each other on the family Zooms every once in a while, but it's not much more than that. Like she'll text me for HBO password every once in a while, like, or vice versa. Like I'll be like, hey, what's the Xfinity login? And that's like our relationship that, at this point.
That's interesting that the parents asking the child about the HBO login. It's oftentimes the reverse. You'd mentioned that your sister's quite a bit younger than you, right? Jojo, that's also an actor.
Yeah. So Jojo and her sister, her twin, are 4 years younger than me.
Oh, and so, do you feel like your sister's experience with your mom as an actor was different than yours in any way?
Yeah, I think, she started doing musicals and theater and stuff like that. And it wasn't like on as big of a, you know, professional level, even though the productions that she was in were great. Like, you know, it was like a youth theater camp and stuff like that, like where, you know, the kids would put on Sweeney Todd or whatever, or Les Mis. She was fucking, I mean, she was so good in Les Mis. And like all of the shows that she was in, she was usually the lead or like, you know, one of the main characters. And she's just such a natural talent. And all of that was, you know, I think she had more autonomy over it than I did just because it was not as much pressure like to work because there was no like her getting paid, like, you know, and then she went to theater school like I did. Same. We went to the same program for university, both dropped out because we were both already working and like, you know, it was like, honestly couldn't afford it either. And she's kind of had her career in her own hands, like, the whole time. She got an agent, like, you know, while she was in college and started booking, like, you know, film and a couple of, like, theater productions. And then she moved to New York when she was, like, 21, I think, like, to do this off-Broadway show, and has been, like, steadily working ever since that gig. And yeah, my mom is, like, still, you know, of course, like, for both of us too, like, the Lifetime movie I did last year, she was posting it all over her Instagram, and, you know, anything that any of us, you know, book, because my sister, the other one, Sarah, she's a chef, but, like, she recently had, like, you know, a prefix meal that she curated herself at her restaurant. And, you know, my parents are both very just, like, proud of all of us, you know. And my baby brother, the youngest, he's 18, he's a musician, more talent in his pinky finger than I have in my entire body, you know.
Do you mind me asking then? I mean, if it sounds like you got, like, really supportive parents and your mom's engaged, I'm sorry we didn't find that essay that you wrote. I would love to have read it before we talked with you. But what was it then? You know, you said something a couple minutes ago about, you know, your sister sort of had more autonomy in her pursuit of acting than you did, which just makes it sound like you didn't feel like you had enough autonomy. So am I right in thinking that? And also, what was that your mom was sort of way more in charge? I mean, when you talked about going in and performing and that you had your own instincts, but your mom's voice trumped those instincts, was it just that? Or was it in your, you know, like, were you like, I don't want to audition today? And your mom's like, doesn't matter, you're going.
Yeah, it was very much that. Like, really? there were times, and then after, you know, the first 2 years of auditioning and stuff after School of Rock, I also got bit by the, like, musical theater bug, and I really wanted to do that. I really just wanted to do the school plays and be normal and have, like, a normal high school experience. And there was talk of us potentially moving out here for pilot season. And, you know, I was in Chicago at the time. I grew up in Chicago, and, oh, fun building stuff. like, there was potential for me to come out here and, you know, live at the Palazzo and do pilot season, like all of, you know, the kid actors did at that time. And I was just like, no, I really don't want to do that. Like, I want to do school. Like, I want to go to school and, you know, have a chance at getting into, like, a good university. And I didn't feel like I could do that if I were to be constantly in and out of, you know, LA and Chicago and, you know.
And what was her response then? Did she say yes?
She did. She did say yes. And I ended up, you know, I ended up just doing that because it came to this point where I was just like, you know, I really can't do this. And I think she could tell too that I was getting burnt out and getting kind of beaten down by all the rejection, because I didn't book anything that I was, you know, called in for. I had a couple callbacks for things like Spanglish, and there's so many, like, gigs that I didn't get that are hilarious looking at, like, who got them and, like, who, you know, what they went on to do too. But things like, yeah, Hannah Montana and Zoe 101 and Unfabulous and all those, like, Nickelodeon Disney things that didn't end up happening, and the Nativity Story and Spanglish and all that. And I was really getting kind of discouraged and thinking, you know, internalizing that thing of, like, you know, her saying, like, maybe you're just meant to be a musician, you know, and started to internalize that really a lot, even though acting was what I genuinely loved to do and wanted to do. But then the musical theater allowed me to blend the two of them, right? Like, and, you know, do music and acting at the same time. And also, like, who doesn't love a musical? Well, there are a lot of people who don't love musicals, but I, you know, was fully obsessed, and that then Broadway kind of became the goal. So I started taking, like, voice lessons in addition to the guitar and, you know, doing school plays and all of that. And that's, like, kind of where I found my joy.
There's a certain, you're reminding me of something that I can recall from being a young performer, which is how much of your life is wrapped up, or how much of your identity is wrapped up in the work that you're doing, the jobs that you booked. And when you would meet other young performers and you said, hey, how are you? Or, hey, what's going on? What that question actually meant is, have you worked on anything recently? And then people would either try to skirt the issue, like, well, you know, I've had a lot of good auditions lately, that whole thing. One, yeah. Do you relate to that at all? And then two, has your relationship to that changed over the years?
Yes, I do. Yeah, there's that thing. It's like LA. It's very much like, what do you do? Or, what are you working on? Like,
that's, I was about to say, yeah, I don't know if that's,
you know, it's like,
yeah, I don't know if,
go ahead.
It's not that it's exclusive to kids. That's not my point.
It's not exclusive at all. It's just exclusive.
No, it's not. But it's not about the exclusivity. It's about having those types of thoughts as a young person, or maybe not something
that's so weird. We're kids. Like, we're fucking kids. And we're, you know, it's so funny because, like, last night at the tattoo shop, this person that was one of the other tattoo artists was like, yeah, I just turned 18 so I can finally like get my license. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I had a, you know, full-time job the year that you were born. Like, that's insane. And like, you know, and he was just like, cool. But like,
but all, I mean, but you know, there's also some, you know, I think just in relation to the, you know, that sort of cliche of people being like, how are you? Like, really, and it really just meaning, how's your career doing? What have you been, you know, how good do you feel about your career? You know, that being the question. Wait, hold on. Go ahead.
It's the delay. Sorry.
Get in there.
The second piece is actually the thing I'm more interested in, which is, has your relationship to that changed? So when you wrap up so much of your identity as a young person in the work that you're doing, and now that you're an adult and you're still an actor, has your relationship to the work and how much of your identity is wrapped up in that changed over the years?
Yeah. When somebody asks me how I am, and I know that what they're asking is, what are you working on? I lead with how I am, like, what beautiful things are happening in my life outside of the work. You're like, oh my God, I hit a PR in my deadlift yesterday. And like, my girlfriend and I are going to Joshua Tree for Valentine's Day and blah, blah, blah. And then, in March, I'm going to go shoot something in Boston. And like, it's going to be very cool. And just wrap this other thing. But like, I often try to like do like a sandwich of like, you know, what's going well in my life outside of acting, working, whatever, then the work, and then something else that's going well in my life outside of acting, just so people know that I'm not like that kind of person that leads in with like all my accolades or, you know, the things I'm booking, or especially like when things are dry. Like if somebody asks me how I am and my first thing that I say is like, ugh, I've been auditioning a lot, but nothing's fucking landing. Like, I haven't booked in like so many months. Like that, to me, is like that scarcity mindset that, you know, nothing is going well when there's so much going well outside of my career. And, you know, the pandemic really taught me a lot about that, because before the pandemic, I was working. I was also doing stand-up too, when I was, you know, traveling a lot for that and you know, doing a lot of theater and film and all that. And then the pandemic happens and I have nothing. And so I had to find new things, you know. I had to.
I was about to say, is that where the podcast gets born out of?
Yeah,
is that
when you, definitely.
When you started it,
started it.
So do you mind me asking what?
Go ahead.
Yeah, why? I'm really curious too. I don't know exactly when you started, but I imagine it's right around when we were starting ours. And there was I don't know if you know, there's a couple other ones that started too. And I'm curious what the genesis of that was for you, and what your thoughts were, you know, as you were starting it, and how that's evolved over the course of you doing it for a while.
Yeah. So during the pandemic, when I felt like, oh God, I don't have anything outside of my career, my career has kind of become my identity, I had to really look at my values and think about like what outside of the industry and outside of, you know, acting, performing and all that was bringing me joy. And unfortunately, it wasn't a lot. It wasn't much, but I had this, you know, secret love for witchcraft. This is, go with me on this. This is like big journey. Here we go.
It's there.
So
okay. Yep.
I started taking these online classes with this company called Holisticism, and they are a platform for intuitive business owners, you know, witchy entrepreneurs, people in the wellness space, etc.
Witchy entrepreneurs.
Yeah, witchpreneurs.
My wife might actually fall into that category.
Oh my God.
She'll love me saying that, but
no, I've been reading tarot cards for a long time just for myself. And I was just like, you know, maybe I could do this like as like a little side hustle, like offer little readings. And because of the, you know, following I had, I started TikToking and doing little, you know, TikTok content. And then people started to recognize me from School of Rock, and they were like, wait a second, this like witch tarot girl is like so familiar. Like, where do I know her from? And then I did the big reveal TikTok where I was just like, that's me, like from School of Rock. And people started booking tarot readings with me. And then through Holisticism.
That's really,
is that a yeah. whole
that's
thing?
Really funny.
Former child actors funny. Doing tarot readings is a business.
Yeah, the
it's like
the
Jonathan Lipnicki could be doing tarot readings.
I mean, if he was into it, I do know a handful of you know, former child actors who now kind of have fallen into that spiritual witchy wellness lifestyle, which is really cool, and it makes sense.
I think more than a few.
Yeah,
I think more than a few.
Really?
Yeah, we've had a few on the show. I think what happens, this is my take on it. My take is that it's such a unique childhood, and it opens you up to such an orthodox
way. I'm saying this like I'm somehow removed from the witchy world, but I was the crystal kid. I was feng shuiing my bedroom at like 11 years old. I had
feathers. Oh my God. Yeah.
I think I went to my first psychic when I was probably 12 years old. Put so much of my, is this going to work? Is it not going to work, in the hands of a psychic? I forgot about all of this stuff, but I was totally
in that world. Again, how did that go for you? What did they say?
That's a whole other thing, but the level
it's a whole thing on itself. It's a whole hour special.
Oh my God, we could do AJ's, it's a whole hour special. I forgot about all of this stuff
and his relationship to his mom.
It speaks to the level of control I was trying to exert over my career as an actor. And there's something else underneath that. There's a mental health thing going on underneath that. But between visualization and crystals, like, oh my God, just totally, totally out there.
That's right. You were trying to secret. I remember for a long while you were trying to secret your bank account
before the secret
show. But even before the secret was a thing, you were like, "This is what I'm doing. I'm going to make a little mark. I'm going to make a little visual board.
Yeah.
And this is me. Yeah. I'm going to be going to the upfront. I'm going to be on a TV show.
I still have, like, you know, if I'm really like dead set on a gig, which I try not to be super attached to any audition or anything like that, but like, you know, I recently went in for something really, really cool that was like a character that I was like, oh my God, like, this is me, this is perfect. And, you know, after I sent in the tape, I made my Instagram bio, like, you know, I put little emojis that represented that character in my Instagram bio and didn't say anything about it. Like, you know, people didn't really care. Like, they didn't see that. They were like, what is a mango in your, but I ended up getting the role because I had like set a little digital altar for myself. It's stupid little shit, like not stupid, but like little things like that. Or I'll, you know, people will see all the time on my stories, I'll post like a disco ball and then there'll be like teeny tiny text that even if you zoom in all the way, you can't read what it says. I'll tell you what it says. It says, I am a series regular on a TV show that is watched by millions. I am a household name. I am a legend. I'm verified on all platforms. And then stuff like that happens. Like, it is wild. Like, I mean, this is exposing
Marquette,
maybe
these are the tricks, though. And maybe, Marquette, you're doing this too, and you've just never told me. Do you have
a digital altar
for anything?
Like it. I don't. I unfortunately, I wish I had the mental fortitude to be able to do these things and not obsess over them or for them not to become completely unhealthy, because that's what I do with those. Unfortunately, it's when I think if I don't let go of auditions and the results of things that I can't shut my brain off. So I end up driving myself straight into the ground. And I think it becomes because I remember I read years ago this thing about Robert Downey Jr. did that for like Iron Man. Like, he had auditioned and he was like up for the role and he wasn't sure if he was gonna cast, and him and a friend like created a shrine in a closet or something dedicated to Tony Stark. He was like, this is it. This is like, and this is my reemergence as an actor after decades of being like a lunatic and being in and out of jail and being a mess. And this is it. And I gotta have it. And he made a shrine and it happened. And I remember I was like, oh great, I'm gonna shrine everything. And it just like, I can't, like, for me, by the end of that, people are like, don't you just want to actually perform? And I'm like, oh, right, right. Yeah. You got to perform first. And then you get the shrines. Okay. Fair. You know, so I that's where I go, unfortunately. But,
yeah, but like, I
wanted to get back to
the podcast of it all.
I want to get back to the genesis of how your witchy holistic training turns into
me having this.
Let's make a podcast to talk to former kid actors.
It's cool. Yeah. Like within this holisticism community, it's everything from tarot readers, Reiki practitioners, people who make special essential oil blends, skincare products, whatever, to people who host podcasts about things like this. And then like they hosted this workshop on like how to create an intuitive, you know, business off a podcast or how to monetize a podcast. And I was like really interested in it. I love podcasts. Like I have, you know, constantly just have something playing while I'm doing like, you know, my work or like cleaning around my house. There's always something on. And I was just like, I've always wanted to host a podcast. And around the time that article that I wrote came out, and it did go like viral on the internet, like people were asking me to be on their podcast. And I was just like, I want to like host my own so I don't have to tell the same fucking 5 stories over and over again. Like, you know, no offense. Now I'm like, you know, I love it regardless. But like, I was like, okay, what would my podcast be? You know? And I thought, I was like, well, why isn't it an extension of the article? Like, why isn't it a where are we now, where we talk about where we are now without BuzzFeed doing that for us and doing that whole thing where usually if you're tagged in one of those like 15 child stars, you probably don't remember because they stopped working. Like, you know, one of those like shitty articles, like they usually take the worst picture that they can find of you. They like throw together facts that are like not really facts, you know, they're usually outdated. And oftentimes when I see those, especially like ones that I'm in, I just feel so insecure. And I'm just like, wow, like they really think I stopped acting after one thing. And it's not the case at all. If they even like looked at my IMDb, like there's multiple things on there, like Sid's School of Rock. And I thought like, not only do all the kids from School of Rock like have amazing, fruitful lives and careers in and out of the industry, but like I know other people who like were child actors who definitely like need a platform to talk about some of the stuff that happens, you know, for child actors. And so through holisticism, I started taking like little Zoom empathy calls with people who host podcasts, produce podcasts, you know, listen to podcasts. And
what's an empathy call? Sorry, I've never heard that term before. What is that?
It's just like a 15-minute to 20-minute Zoom where I come with the same questions for each call. And for this one, for example, it was like, you know, what kind of podcasts do you like to listen to? What do you feel is missing from the world of podcasting? In an ideal world, if I could wave a magic wand, what's the perfect podcast, you know, like for you? And then I would talk to other former child stars too and have similar, you know, calls and ask questions kind of based on that. And it's like, you know, what was this like for you as a kid? Blah, 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 blah. And then I record all of those, I take notes, and then I have more information. It's a really cool, you know, little skill. It's basically like a less annoying way of saying, can I pick your brain about something?
Do you mind me asking? It's a fascinating way for you to come up with it. I think we have our own version of that sans. There was a bit of spiritual searching, I think AJ and I were just having in general. And for us, you know, the genesis for our podcast was this. We haven't talked about this off air, but, you know, for us was mainly that we just realized that there was all these stories that weren't going to be told. We just knew so many, and we had knew so many friends that we just realized like they're just going to disappear into the ether, and we kind of wanted to just document all these things, but immediately found that a bit of a responsibility towards the subject matter, and suddenly went, oh right, like we need to be really sophisticated in our approach and the way we think about this and start talking about it, because it's much more complicated than like, hey man, tell us about that time that you and Tom Hanks went to dinner in 1993, you know, and tell us about the one role that, you know, in Hook that you thought you were going to play that you didn't get, you know, or like whatever it is, right? Like we suddenly had to be like, oh yeah, let's start opening this up. And so I'm curious about a couple things real fast with you. One is I'm really curious what it was that you said specifically in your essay about your mom that seemed to, that you think was the thing that she had a problem with. And two, I'm really curious about that essay in general. Did you solicit writing that? Did someone reach out to you? The other thing I'm also curious about is you, it seems like, I mean, you know, you're even trying to do something totally different in your life, give tarot card readings, and your role as a kid actor in School of Rock, sudden, you know, it gets thrust into that endeavor in your life. So it feels like it's an inescapable part of your life a little bit too. And so I just wonder, like, your relationship as time's gone by and starting a podcast, it seems like that you've embraced that and you've worked through it. But I would love to hear, I know a bit of what you've written. I don't know if it was in that essay, but a little bit online I found that you wrote some interesting things about how your time post kid acting resulted in some, you know, pretty intense things. I think you wrote some self-harm, that you attributed it a bit to addiction, and that it, you attributed it to a fear that it, you had like peaked by 10.
Yeah, that's basically.
And like those three things stuck out to me.
Yeah, that is basically what the essay was about. And you know, ultimately the essay was about me. It was not about my mom. It was not about my parents. It was not about my trauma. It was kind of just about like where I am now, like, and the journey it took to get there. And it was meant to be more of a, like, the reason I wrote it was because I felt that if I didn't, I would live with those thoughts forever. And something, a tool that I, you know, use in recovery from like substance abuse and all that and self-harm and all that is writing things down on paper so that they are not so big in my head. When I put them on paper, they become small. And they're off my conscience, and I can just like let it go and surrender it kind of to the universe. And writing the essay, I just wrote it and I put it on Medium, which is like, you can put anything on Medium. And I didn't think anything really would happen. I just like wanted it to be out of my brain. And I also thought it could help somebody if, you know, if they saw it, if somebody like, if somebody who went through some substance abuse stuff, saw that and saw any piece of themselves in my writing, that it would help them. And that was like really the message behind it, was like, you're not alone. And, you know, even obsolete child stars go through this too, you know? The thing that I think bothered my mom the most was that I, you know, to her, it felt like I made it seem like me taking guitar lessons and going to auditions and stuff was against my will, which it wasn't. I mean, I always joke that like I was put in guitar lessons against my will, like it, which is partially true. But then like I ended up loving it, and I was, you know, thrust into the spotlight against my will. But then I ended up loving it, you know, all of that, you know, and it's all just like meant to be. And happen when it was supposed to happen for me. And then it, you know, wasn't happening for a while. And then it started happening again, the spotlight and all that. But ultimately, like, I think that my mom, similarly, like you said, your mom is selfish. Like, my mom takes everything so personally. And she, for a while after that piece came out and I started guesting a little people's podcasts, and we weren't talking at the time, she would like listen to everything I was on to like make sure I wasn't talking shit about her. And then because we were on no contact and I expressed that boundary really, really firmly that I didn't want to hear from her, she would take space in my sister's lives and talk to them about it. And their entire conversations would be about me again. And it kind of repeated that cycle of my sister's lives having to be about me. And, you know, it just became an unhealthy dynamic. And then my sisters ended up having to set the boundary too of like, hey, when we talk, I don't want to talk about Riv. Like, I want to talk about me, my life and what's going on with me. And so, you know, I think she like stopped doing that almost emotional self-harm of listening to my podcasts and stuff, and took some self-care for herself as well, which is really good. But yeah, I think nothing I said in that, like, you know, was untrue. But I think it's just like how it was perceived by her that made her feel insecure, you know, and made her
I mean,
look in the mirror at herself a little bit on her behavior, and a lot of times, like, people who are codependent or selfish, or, you know, have not looked at their own stuff, when their stuff is kind of shown to them, they're like, "Ooh, I don't like that. It makes them uncomfortable." And, you know, there are two options. It's like, either you work on it or you continue to suffer from it, you know?
I got to imagine, though, what I want to say too, it sounds really brave of you to put that essay out, and I'm looking forward to reading it. I'll go read this tonight after we talk. I'm sorry again, I didn't find that prior. But it's amazing that what I find, though, is somewhat of the clickbaity stuff that took from that essay, you know? Because I wasn't sure where those things were coming from, because I saw snippets of, obviously, we put in that essay on these clickbaity sort of things. And I don't like reading that stuff, especially before talking to somebody. So I just kind of, like, you know, it's like scrolling headlines. You just kind of see something and go, oh, but it's fascinating, you know, it's fascinating. That's where it came from. It's really brave that you did that. And it sounds like sort of putting this stuff out into the light and connecting with the world. It's really nice. And it's also really wonderful that you were doing it with a sense of reaching somebody that, you know, that needs to hear that too. I was just thinking too, at the end of what you're saying, I'm just thinking, and AJ, I'd love for you to jump in on this too, but I got to imagine one of the most difficult things about being a parent that has a kid that's a young professional performer is this. I bet the most difficult thing is wondering all the time and making sure all the time that your kid really wants to do it. You know, I got to imagine that's a really hard thing, because kids are hard to read in general, and kids change their minds about a billion things all the time. So I got to imagine that's really crazy. And so I imagine then it makes sense to me if any parent hears from a kid, even the sense that maybe they didn't fully want to be there or something, or that maybe they didn't fully always feel that it's going to hit a really deep part of them and a really deep insecurity. Because and this is where I want you to jump in, AJ, is if I'm remembering correctly, I think when you and I started this, I think you had a conversation with your mom at one point where she was like, that's not the way it was. You know, I was never doing, like, it felt a little defensive over whatever we said, which I don't think was, I don't remember saying anything that should have set off that fire alarm in her or anything, but it did, you know?
We're still concerned with setting off the fire alarm.
We are. We're actually concerned all the time.
We still censor ourselves for my mom. It's on there all the time.
Yeah,
but it's interesting to think about the different memories that we have and our parents have about the experience. And of course, we're going to have different memories because they're dealing with very different things than we are. However, as a young person looking to identify the trauma that affected our lives, we're looking at our parents a certain way, and they're not looking at their children thinking, why am I this way? Let me see what my kids did to make me this way. It doesn't work in reverse. It only goes one direction. So of course we're remembering things differently than they are. But that, yeah, I do hear my mom's voice most of the time when we're doing this podcast, being like, oh no, don't say that.
Me too.
Don't say that. She's going to find out. She's going to find out. Don't say it.
Yeah, no, I feel that all the time. Yeah. I mean, and there was, there were, again, like with what you said, like that feeling of like, oh my God, like maybe she didn't want to do this the whole time. Like, and that I think was part of it too, that she didn't realize, because I mean, like I said, at the time I was very like doormat child. I would just do whatever they wanted me to do. My parents and any kind of authority figure, I was just kind of afraid of, because of, you know, what happened in my childhood and stuff behind the scenes with my parents and all of that. Like, and I do talk about that just a little bit in the article, no details or anything, but I do like use the term like abusive or like, you know, emotionally gaslighting or manipulating or stuff like that. Like, cause that is like kind of unfortunately, you know, I can say all I want, like they were just doing the best they could with the tools that they had. And my parents are both trauma survivors too. And like, they're just using the tools that they had, but ultimately those tools were rusty. They hurt. They ended up leaving me with some little battle wounds, and that's just the reality of it. And you know, my parents were really upset. Both of them were like kind of upset that I put some of that in the public eye. But, you know, what am I going to do? Like, you know, just live with that in my head. Like,
no, true. It's so nice. You know, it's funny because that is I relate fully. And on this podcast in particular, I've started to gain more. I've left more room to be open about those things for myself, you know, in my life, in this, and very specifically, you know, trauma and like emotional abuse and the effects it had on me as a person and as an actor and on my career and my ability to show up even as a young adult, and how it led to me, how it played into, I'm also, I'm sober, and, you know, and how that plays into, you know, played into a drinking career and how that played into my decision to stop drinking. And, you know, and so there's, it's always a lot to untangle. And I got to imagine, well, maybe before that thought's not important. Sorry. You know what I was wondering with you, which is, you know, when you say I was really sick of saying like the same five things, you know, over and over again on podcasts. So like, what in your time now, spending this time reevaluating or looking at your life as a young actor through a new lens, you know, what do you think, like, what don't you talk about then? Or what do you, you know, if you can enlighten us on, like, you personally, like what you found, or how it's, if you found a clarity, or if there's some real, like some growth that you've experienced, like looking at this whole subject, like, you know, and not the, I don't know, we don't know what we don't know, right? So I don't know what to ask you that isn't those to solicit the same five things that you've said a billion times in life. But I'm curious what that might be.
Well,
I'm
just like curious, you said, like, you know.
Because you're interviewing other former kid actors.
Yeah.
And you're listening to them like we are. And for us, it's created a lot of clarity in our own lives. And it's also, it's been a really interesting experience in that there's so much more relatable than we thought, you know, and there's also some really stark differences, some things where we go, oh yeah, wow, I didn't know other people were going through that all the time. And I didn't know that that's a part of this thing. Just cause we didn't experience it, you know, we can see how that is very much, you know, there's certain issues and certain problems. So I'm just curious overall, mm-hmm. you know, with your personal experience with it all and how you see the kid actor, in general, mm-hmm. you know, how that's evolved and your thoughts on it.
Yeah. Well, it's like a lot of what you were talking about with like, oh my God, what was it like working with Tom Hanks? Or like, what was it like, you know, and the first question everyone always asks me is like, what was it like working with Jack Black? What was it like working with Richard Linklater?
You know? Chris, I'm so proud of us. We didn't even get there.
How amazing it was, and how like that set was so warm and so good. And, you know, well, like the whole thing is like, well, yeah, like it doesn't seem like you really did much after, like, you know, it's like, no, I fucking did. And I hate having to like begrudgingly say, no, I've been working the whole time. Like, you know, even when I wasn't like booking like big national or like international level globally viewed things, like I was still doing like the things that were important to me, like doing the high school production of Beauty and the Beast. Like that was like equally important to me as School of Rock was, you know, playing a fucking dancing napkin was more important to me than School of Rock was, because, you know, of how addicted I was to like having everybody like me and, you know, having all those eyes on me and stuff. Like, but it's so funny. Like I could ask, you know, the actress who was on Degrassi what it was like to work with Drake. Or I could go a little deeper and watch some of the episodes that she was heavily featured in and be like, hey, like this storyline is really controversial for the time that it aired. Like, did you get a lot of, you know, and go deeper on stuff that, you know, is more important than the celebrity and the glitz and the fame of it all. Because I don't, just knowing how I react to those big Hollywood, like, you know, experiences that I had, like, even though there were very few, like, I think what's more interesting to me as both like a podcaster and a podcast guest is talking about like just the deeper emotional, like spiritual stuff rather than all the surface level stuff. And the other question that I, you know, used to get a lot was like just the audition story and the audition process for School of Rock. and all that. And it's like, I could tell that story over and over and over again. Like, but you know, why don't we talk about, say, like the relationship that the cast of School of Rock has now, which like a lot of people, you know, through my social media know this, that like, we are still a family. Like the kids, we have a group text. We talk every day. You know, we are in constant communication with each other. You know, one of the other kids from the movie stayed at my place for 2 weeks while I was out of town filming something because he was like visiting LA and just wanted a place to stay. And I, you know, I let him into my home, and like, you know, we love each other. We anytime we're in the same city, we try to get together. And it's this like family that is so important to me, like more important than like, oh my God, like, so like, do you and Miranda Cosgrove still keep in touch? Like, you know, but that's just more exciting for me to talk about.
Totally. So what was like working with Jack Black, and do you and Miranda Cosgrove still keep in touch? I'm just kidding. You know what I'm actually wondering was this, you know, cause we're just coming to our end. And I wonder this, it seems like, so as I've talked about my own and started really more talking on this podcast about my own, all the challenges I've faced in my life and stuff, what I realize is, you know, for me, my opinion was that a lot of the challenges I faced because of my internal family structures that were fucked up and dysfunctional, alcoholism, those things would have happened regardless of my being a kid actor. You know, being a kid actor didn't have anything, wasn't the catalyst, I believe, for me, for a lot of those things. But since I was, you know, a kid actor, and continued to be an actor to this day, you know, it has, those things feel they're interlocked, you know, and it's really difficult to sort of pull them apart. So for you, where do you think those two things do pull apart? Like what, you know, it sounds like in some ways you had a really great experience as a kid actor and it gave you a lot of wonderful things. And in other ways, like you said something like, I loved all the eyeballs on me. I loved being up on stage. I loved that attention, but also you felt like you were shy and you were a doormat, you know? And so, you know, those are two starkly different experiences, you know. And so when you really look back at it, if the point blank question is like, did you enjoy your time as a kid actor, and or did you not, and what didn't you enjoy?
Yeah, well, yeah, no, it's like I contain a lot of multitudes. Like I'm on one, like I think the public, you know, my girlfriend always like makes fun of me with this, like she's like, oh my God, like, you know, my little verified, like I'm like, oh my God, stop it. But like in public, I am very comfortable now. Back then, it was really the camera that was terrifying to me because of all of the stuff that I, you know, had internalized from my mom. My mom was a model, like, and she did, the camera adds 10 pounds, or like, you know, everything, you can see everything on camera. It's not like theater where you're like 1,000 feet away and, you know, stuff like that. So I was very, very uncomfortable in front of the, like once they said action, I was frozen. Definitely like in auditions or even on School of Rock, like at some points. But during the Battle of the Band scene, when we're all in front of that live audience, you know, and I grew up playing guitar and doing little recitals and concerts in front of an audience. So I really do think, like, you know, having the live audience as opposed to like 10 men holding equipment and, you know, being that close to your face, it's a very different dynamic. So like and like I said, like I found more joy in doing theater because that's live performance and that like, only this group of 300 people get to see this show tonight. Only this group of 15 stoners in somebody's attic get to see me do this stand-up set tonight, right? Versus film where you're doing it 10 times, different angles, and you have to do it the same way every time. It's just a lot. It was a lot of, you know, anxiety for me being on camera. But, I mean, I still did love, I mean, there were times when I really did love being pulled out of school a little early to go to an audition and get Panera, you know, There were times that I really did love going shopping for audition outfits with my mom. Like there were times that I really did love having to leave school for a month to go do press for School of Rock. Like I'm 10 years old and I'm in Tokyo. What the fuck? Like that's nobody has this experience except for the ones who do. And like, it was a lot of duality. You know, there's everything has that like light side and that shadow side, right? Tarot cards too. Like, you know, the death card doesn't always mean bad. You know, it also can mean rebirth, transformation, new beginnings, right? Or it can mean death. Like it could mean destruction. It can mean addiction and ego death and all of that fun stuff. But, you know, I found that in leading up to me writing that article, I was really harping on the bad. I was really thinking about like, wow, I really did peak at 10. Like that sucks. And like everything cool that I've done since then, nobody's going to fucking see it because nobody cares about me. Self-pity, blah, blah, blah. Me, 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 poor me. And in writing that piece, like, and even thinking about it, like looking at where I was when I put that piece into the ether of the internet, versus now, like I have so much more comfort in the idea that like, yeah, the first gig that I ever auditioned for / booked happens to be the favorite movie of millions of people out there. Like, and I meet people every day that are like, oh my God, School of Rock was my favorite movie. And I'm like, that's fucking cool. Go off. Like, whereas 2 years ago, I'd be like, I just want to talk about it. Where now I have this like level of gratitude and reverence around, especially like, you know, one of our cast members in the band like recently passed away, and like, you know, it really did unlock this like new level of kind of the legacy that particular project holds. You know, there's a musical and a TV show based off of it. There's actual Schools of Rock like in America, all over the world. I think it's like a global thing at this point. And kids every day, like, or parents of kids every day will reach out to me and be like, I started playing guitar because of you. And now I'm able to look at that and be like, that's fucking badass. And every time I see a band and there's a female bassist or a, you know, feminine presenting bassist in the band, I'm like, did I have a little something to do with that? Like, maybe that's a narcissistic thought, but, and usually what ends up happening is like, yeah, you did, you know? So I have this level of like reverence and respect for that project. And also when those like thoughts occasionally arise now and then of like, oh, like I wish it wasn't the one thing. I wish it was a bigger role, or, you know, I wish that more had happened for me as a child after School of Rock. I can look at it and be like, no, like, even though it didn't, you were still like living your best life as the dancing napkin in Beauty and the Beast, you know? So, you know, ultimately Chris, everything happened exactly when it was supposed to. And I really don't spend too much time, you know, stressing over what didn't happen when I think it was supposed to.
There's not a better place to transition into the last two questions of the show. That you just summed it up so perfectly. That's the perfect spot. So we ask everybody these two questions, Rivka. And the first is, would you allow, if you have children, would you allow your child to become a performer?
If they wanted to, if they said, you know, mom, I really want to take guitar lessons, or I want to do dance, or I want to do theater, I'd be like, yeah, if that's what brings you joy, absolutely.
Would you ever, though, let them be a professional performer? Would you ever let them get headshots and an agent and drive
if they wanted to? And if they wanted to, it's like, yeah. Like, and luckily, I have so many, you know, lessons in what not to do. And I think it requires, like, honestly, I am a big fan of therapy, and I wish there were like on-set therapists and stuff like that for kids, or at least counselors or people that are there. And I know, like, I've talked to a lot of people who, you know, on my podcast and on, and just in life that were child performers that say the same thing. They're like, I wish there was like a counselor. It's like, I'm 12 years old and I have to do a rape scene. Like, that's crazy. And like, at least like, you know, there, there are some kids that, that I, or people that I talk to that like, they had like a really special relationship, their onset tutor with like the first AC was just like checking in and being like, hey, like, are you good? Like, you know, are you okay? You need to take a break. You need to go draw or something, or go lie down, take a nap. Like, I didn't have that. Like, not necessarily like in the aftermath of School of Rock, like it was kind of just like work, work, work. And so like, if I did have a kid that wanted to do this at a professional level, I'd be like, you know, checking in with them as much as I can along the way. And I know kids get embarrassed by their parents and stuff. Oh, mom, like, no, I'm fine. Like, and having some kind of like third party to kind of step in every once in a while, if necessary. But yeah, again, it's like, if that's what they wanted to do, and if they did want to do what I do, I'd definitely be honest with them about like, okay, just so you know, like I did this too, and here's what I learned from it. You know, and, but then again, it's like, what do I fucking know? Like, I might have kids and then become a crazy asshole. Like, you know, a lot of our parents end up becoming, but that's just like the kind of, it's like kind of a part of being a parent, isn't it? I wouldn't know.
Chris is the only one that would know here.
Yeah. I'm the only one that knows. I think being a parent is, brings out a side of you that is completely unexpected.
Right.
Is the truth. So I think it is an unpredictable thing. My guess for you is you would not be an asshole, Rivka. You don't seem like an asshole. My guess is you've spent, as you put it, you know, you've dedicated your life to growth and healing and spirituality, and that's really beautiful. And I don't tend to think that that makes for a whole lot of buttheads in the world. I think it tends to make for a lot of more compassionate, kind, tolerant, loving people. So it's wonderful that you're doing that, and I imagine if you get the gift to children at some point or commit to something like that, I think it's hard. I mean, I have a 2-year-old, and it's like, you know, I went from like immediately like, yeah, I think so, to like, ooh, actually, I don't know, to I no, absolutely not, to like, fuck yeah, I would, that'd be great. And then now it's like,
yeah,
no, that's a disaster waiting to happen. So honestly, I think time will tell. Well, this is our last question to you. Well, maybe this too. Is there anything else you wanted to add about today? Is there anything else you wanted to, as you were anticipating this discussion, that you were like, I hope to talk about that, or that was coming to mind?
No, I think it's like always, my message always is like, if you're struggling with addiction or anything like that, or, you know, codependency, self-harm, any eating disorders, you're not alone.
Listen to these three former kid actors and we'll set you straight.
Well, like, you're not alone. And
don't give us the responsibility. Don't put it on us.
Resources, you know, you can always... I my DMs are always open. Like, I don't respond to all of them, to be honest, because a lot of them are just like dick pics. But like, you know, if you are seriously struggling, like there are so many resources to get help in those areas. And then, like, I think, you know, I talk a lot about this pretty publicly. Like, I was a big drug addict and an alcoholic, and I've got like 4 years, you know, distance from substances and alcohol and self-harm, and, you know, my eating disorder stuff is like an everyday kind of one day at a time thing, but like it's simple but not easy to get recovery. I think it's just like asking for help is like the most important. It's the first step before the first step. Is that
yeah. Well, if you ever want to start a 12-step recovery program for young kid performers,
yeah,
let's do,
oh
it
my god,
we're
former,
in, let's do,
yeah,
it,
former, yeah, former child, yeah, stars,
we'll,
anonymous,
yeah, that's what we'll start, yep. Exactly. Rivka, you've been wonderful. Our last question, AJ, you want to throw it out there?
Rivka, what did you spend all of that School of Rock Coogan account money on? Really, what did you spend your Coogan account money on?
Yeah, y'all have time for a little fucking mind-blowing thing.
Wonderful story.
I wouldn't say it's wonderful.
Absolutely. Blow our minds.
My parents, they used it without my knowing. And it was, yeah.
Shit,
yeah.
Really?
So they, I don't know how they manipulated this and made this happen, but they, you know, it was around the recession, things were not good for them, and they used it for their mortgage, and they were very dishonest about it for years. And then when I you know, moved out to LA, I wanted a little nest egg. So I wanted to take some of it out. I hadn't touched it because I obviously couldn't and didn't know that I couldn't. In my mind, I was just like, I'm saving this to like get buy property or something or car or something when I eventually make the move back out to LA. I moved here like 4 years ago on Halloween 2017. And I was like, hey, I like would love to have like a little nest egg for some savings for when I move out there, just, you know, in case of emergency, also possibly for, you know, rent or buying a condo out here. And they were like, yeah, like we set up a deal that you couldn't have that money until you had a college diploma. Sorry. And I was just like, I call bullshit. And I did some investigating of my own and I found out that it was gone. So what ended up happening was I kind of just like came to my dad with that knowledge and being like, hey, just so you know, that's highly illegal. And I do require that money back because it is mine. And whatever you did with it, I don't care. Could have asked me and I would have probably said yes, as long as you guys paid me back. But now, you know, knowing this, I actually do need you to pay me back immediately. And ever since then, it's been like installments, which I use for my artistic endeavors. Like some of that check from School of Rock has gone to buying podcast equipment. Some of it has gone to making a music video. Some of it has gone towards rent when I'm having a little financial crisis. And then the rest of it I have in savings.
Fair enough. That's a lot to get through.
Yeah.
And that gives it so much sudden more context to your relationship with your parents and to be a kid actor. You sound like a very brave, strong person. Okay. It sounds like you. No, you do, because I don't know what I'd do if that was the case. I mean, my parents misspent a lot of money, my mother in particular, but I didn't have to face that call. You know, it's a bit blindsiding and that's big. I'm glad you're getting paid back though. I'm glad it hasn't resulted in a lawsuit.
It could. It very much could if the payments stop. But I also don't want to do that because like I know my parents are kind of financially they have trouble with money because of their, you know, ancestral trauma and their beliefs about money. Clearly, if that was what it, you know, what they did. But, you know, I think it's just like the sobriety and the recovery has given me this like growth edge of honesty. And it's also given me this special power that allows me to see through other people's bullshit. And, you know, I don't really have time for lies or anything like that, you know, regardless of who they come from, even my dad, even my mom, like even myself. So I think it was just like taking that action was kind of jarring to them. And I think that was kind of their moment of realizing like, oh shit, our kid's an adult. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm a grown ass woman. Like, you know, I'm not going to like blow all this money on blow, which is like for sure what I would have done if I did get that money at 18. Like I would have definitely thrown it down the toilet to buy drugs or whatever. Because that's what I was doing when I was 18 anyway, with all of the money I was making at my like little side restaurant jobs and stuff. But and it's like, again, comes back to that whole thing of like everything happened when it was supposed to. I was not supposed to get that money when you know, they took it from me. But I'm definitely like in a place where I'm like more responsible and like responsible enough to handle, you know, that amount and the residual checks I get, you know, every quarter, like I'm sure we all do. and sometimes it's like that the cute $11 one, or sometimes it's like a bigger one and, you know, whatever, I get from the art that we made in 2003, I try to put it towards art that I'm making in 2022.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, awesome. I'm really glad we had you on today. I'm so glad you'd reached out. I'm so glad we got to connect here, and I'm so appreciative of your story. And I'm glad you have come out as a embracing and accepting, you know, your life and who you are. And you seem really strong in that. And it's beautiful to see. And I relate so much to it. And I think that might be the best way to thank you for everything you shared about
yourself. Thank you. And you got, I have to get you guys on Where Are We Now? Season 2 coming soon.
Let's do it. I'm in. Let's do it.
Hell yeah.